Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Today I'm so excited. Marissa's back. It's Friday and it's sunny in Montana again, but at least a little cooler than it's been. And just excited to learn some new things. Marissa had some really cool stuff posted on Facebook this week, so I asked her to share some of what she had posted.
Yeah, Jackie, I catered for an event Tuesday night. It was a fundraiser called Taste of Freedom, and it's an event that helps raise money to fight human trafficking, and specifically at Sturgis this year. That's what this event was for. So myself and a couple of other caterers donated our time and had some treats out there to go with. It was a whiskey and distilled spirits tasting. So a bunch of Montana distilleries were on hand and sharing a lot of their stuff. So it was very cool. Good cause. There was a live auction and a silent auction, and I also got to auction off dinner for four as part of that, which was pretty cool. But I made a couple of appetizers, all vegetables. I wanted to use, you know, I don't have a very big garden, but I have a friend who's Hmong, and her family has a garden and a stand on the farmer's market, and I always get my stuff from her. And I just kind of went to the market last Saturday waiting to see what looked good or what popped into my head. And she had some really beautiful golden beets out. Ooh. And so I grabbed a huge amount of those, a huge bag full of them. And I was hoping the Dixon Melon guys would be there already, but the melons weren't quite ready. So I had to get my cantaloupe at Costco. But I'm okay with that on occasion. Uh-huh. And so we ended up doing a couple of things. I did a Greek layered hummus dip. So I did some homemade hummus. Which one of my best friends from college, it's her recipe. She's a vegetarian and she's got some great veggie recipes, but you know, hummus is something so easy to make at home. And it tastes so much better than the stuff you get in the store. It's all it is chickpeas and tahini, which is sort of a sesame sauce it's not really a sauce even. It's a paste. Garlic.
It kind of reminds me of like peanut butter or almond butter.
A little bit. Yeah. Like you could definitely put it on toast if you wanted to. But yeah, lemon, garlic, a little salt and pepper. And I put red chili flakes in mine too, just for a bit of bite. Mm-hmm. But we did a big, bowl of that, and I topped it with Kalamata olives and sun-dried tomatoes and, cucumbers. And then I had a bowl of peppercini sitting there too, simply because I know people don't always like hot stuff, even though I do. And then the other two, recipes were a little more labor intense. We did a cantaloupe mozzarella and prosciutto skewer with a little bit of balsamic reduction. And so, you know, it's pretty easy. Cut the cantaloupe up, use mozzarella balls. And I went to the Good Food Store deli and had them slice prosciutto for me very thinly. So it was really easy to kind of roll up and put on a skewer.
Do you want to explain what prosciutto is in case anybody doesn't know?
Prosciutto is, it's pork. We'll start there. And it is a cured meat. You'll see it a lot on charcuterie plates, or, you know, in Europe. It's becoming way more popular now in, the US and even Montana, but yeah, it's, a cured pork product and it's delicious. And it's, if it's cured correctly, it just melts on your mouth, in your mouth when you take a bite of it. You know, there's usually some good, beautiful fat marbling in it, and it's just a wonderful thing to try. If you like bacon, you will love prosciutto.
That's what I was thinking to describe it. It was kind of like a bacon, but
yeah, it's like a different. You don't have to cook it.
Yeah, that's what I was like, but you can't really call it an uncooked bacon, could you? I don't know. I mean, no. I haven't eaten prosciutto since I was like a little kid, but
it's so good though. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then I drizzled a balsamic reduction over that, which you really just take balsamic vinegar and reduce it. I like to use my burner on my outdoor grill because the very first time I made it in the house. Mm-hmm. And I had to have the windows and doors open when it was like 30 degrees outside because it stunk the house up so bad. and like stung your eyes. It was like a kitchen full of cut raw onions had been. It was bad. So if you do want to make your own balsamic reduction, you know, either have a really good fan on or a vent, or do it outside on a burner. And you just bring it to a boil and let it reduce, and then you can pour it out of like a squeeze bottle, and it's this nice sweet syrupy flavor. It's really great. And then the last appetizer I did, which was the biggest hit of the night, was a golden beet and goat cheese stack with a fresh basil oil. And the fresh basil oil, it's used as much for plate decoration as it is for taste. I mean, it's all it is good olive oil, fresh basil that's been blanched, and salt and pepper. And blanching is something you can do to like keep the color of your vegetables, but not cook it all the way through, I guess, technically. So you dump them in boiling water, and then literally they're in there for 10 seconds, and you take them out and let them dry, pat them dry, and then add them to the olive oil. And it makes this beautiful bright green dressing. And so I used that, and then the golden beets, I just roasted them, you know, 400 degree oven for about an hour. You wrap the beets in foil and you just check for tenderness. You don't want to overcook them. It's hard to overcook beets, but, it is possible. And sometimes they can get a little burned on the bottom. You can always add water. I suggest putting, wrapping your beets in foil. Use a rimmed baking sheet and just pouring a little bit of water in there before you put them in the oven.
Okay.
Don't add cold water halfway through, especially if you have a glass pan. It will shatter your glass pan. Ooh. I speak from experience. It's okay to put it, if you have a metal sheet pan or cookie sheet that you're roasting them on, that works. It makes some weird noises, but it works. And then you just take the beets out, let them cool a little bit until you can touch them. And then if they're done, the skins will be really easy to just rub off, kind of. And I like to do it under some running water. Just one, it helps your fingers not stain so much. You could always wear gloves too if you wanted to. Okay. And the golden beets certainly don't stain as much as red beets do. And so you just take the skins off. And then what I did was take a 2-inch in diameter biscuit cutter. And I kind of just slid it down the beet so that all my beet sizes would be 2 inches in diameter, which is the exact same size the goat cheese roll was. And so I did all that and then just kind of let them cool. I did it in stages. You know, I did the roasting Monday night and then assembled things Tuesday. And so what I had done with the goat cheese, I went out to the garden and got some thyme, some chive, some basil, a little bit of rosemary, and I chopped it up really, really teeny tiny. And then I took the logs of goat cheese that I had and rolled them in the fresh herbs. So you put a piece of plastic wrap down and just sprinkle your cut up herbs over it. And then you roll it and wrap it at the same time. And it makes for a beautiful piece of goat cheese. And so all you do is assemble them. At that point, you cut the goat cheese off in about a 1/4-inch thick slice and put it between two beets. You could always do 2 or 3 stacks of it, so you make a nice high tower of beets. I would do something like that if I was making this for a dinner party of 6 or 8 people. But when I'm just making it for a big group, I want something easy to grab and easy to eat. Okay. And so, yeah, you have the golden beet, a little bit of goat cheese, and another golden beet, and sprinkled with a little sea salt and the basil oil, and it's just delicious.
It sounds, you know, I got to tell you, Marissa, every time we get off the phone, I'm so hungry, and you are totally inspiring me to cook more and like do more homemade, just some fancier dishes again. So it's working.
It's well, and the thing is too, what a lot of people don't take time to think about is that you can make really fancy, delicious food if you just start with really good ingredients. You know, it doesn't have to be complicated. And I think a lot of people misunderstand that. They think if you to make a beautiful meal, you have to spend 4 or 5 hours in the kitchen. And it's not true. If you start with great produce and great meat, or whatever it is that you're eating, it's really easy to make a simple, delicious, quick meal.
That's what my mom always says. And I have to say, when I watch her cook, I'm like, how did you do this so fast? Like, she just makes it look so natural and so...
Yeah, I get that a lot.
I think she's been doing it for so long. So you've been probably doing it for so long, too.
Well, yeah, and it's just the ability to look in the fridge and say, oh, okay, I have a pound of ground beef. What can I make with it that's quick and easy? You know, that will be delicious. Mm-hmm. And that's just something I've always been able to do. And it definitely gets easier the longer I do it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know a lot of people struggle with being able to do that. But I'm constantly putting things together in my head. You know, when I walk through the farmer's market, I never go with a list. It's always, oh, hey, like, what looks delicious today? What do I want to eat tonight?
Right. I'm like that too.
Yeah. I got in the I lived in Chicago for a few years and I got in the habit of going grocery shopping a couple times a week because you had to be able to carry what you bought, you mm-hmm. know, back to your house mm-hmm. or on the L or whatever. So you wouldn't usually buy more than a couple days worth of food. Mm-hmm. So I really got in the habit of just kind of cooking for dinner what I want. You know, I didn't have a set plan for the week. It was like, oh, what sounds good tonight? What recipe did I find today? You know, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very spur of the moment cooking that I did. And I try to have a plan sometimes now, but I still usually go back to spur of the moment cooking because it's more fun. You get to be creative.
Mm-hmm. And also for me, usually a lot of it's what's on sale. What's on sale today? What can I afford today? Like I can go with the intentions that I'm going to. And I was just talking to somebody recently about yams and I was like, oh my goodness, could I grow my own yams and sweet potatoes? Because I don't think I have had a yam or a sweet potato since like Thanksgiving. They've just been so expensive.
They have been expensive, but if you stock up on them, they're cheapest or in November. Mm-hmm. So stock up on them and keep them in your root cellar or wherever is cool and dry mm-hmm. and they'll last for a pretty long time. But yams too, you know, one yam will feed 2 people or 3 people. They're huge. Mm-hmm. So true. you can get away with just getting 1 or 2 and it's not, yeah, they're definitely more expensive than they used to be. I think they've gotten a lot popular.
Oh.
But yeah, that's not something I would ever try growing.
I don't know. They've been like $1.59 a pound in the store and I just can't pay that for a potato. I know because it's just so me. Mike's not going to eat them. But I know. But when you think about like... You know, a 10-pound bag of potatoes is like, what, $2, $3? I complain about paying $3 for a 10-pound bag of potatoes. I'm going to pay $1.59 for 1 pound of a sweet potato. It just seems too much.
Sometimes it's worth it.
Yeah, true. Yeah, and they're really good for you, and they're so yummy.
That is true. But on another note, I know your birthday is coming up.
Okay.
So let's talk cake for a second.
Okay.
A lot of the weddings that I've been catering, I'm just doing desserts. And it's funny, I at the very last minute Saturday, I forgot I had offered to cook 12 cupcakes or bake 12 cupcakes for the Northside West Side block party. And I got a little reminder email from the lady who had asked me to do it. And I was like, oh, crap. So I have a Nigella Lawson. It's a fairy cake recipe. And this recipe has saved my tush so many times because you make it in the food processor. You literally dump all the ingredients in and add the milk as it processes. And you bake them in Montana, I think I keep them in the oven for 10 minutes at 350. And they come out and it makes exactly 12 cupcakes. And it's just the greatest little recipe ever. And you can, you know, add whatever you want into them. But so I came home quickly and made those. But the great thing about cupcakes is just even a tablespoon or two of something can spice it up. And so I put 2 tablespoons of evening and Missoula tea in.
Really?
And then I live with somebody who is a chocolate lover. And these are his favorite cupcakes. And they have no chocolate in them.
Okay.
And it's
I'm a chocolate lover too.
Yeah, it surprised both of us that he loved them so much. But yeah, it's just I got the recipe idea originally from a chamomile cupcake that I'd run across in a cookbook, And, you know, evening in Missoula tea is very similar to chamomile tea. So I said, I'll try it with this. And you just get the essence of the tea in the cupcake.
Okay, then, let me just go back a step. When you say put tea in it, brewed tea or just
packet? Just the tea leaves.
The tea leaf. Oh, all right. That was what I first pictured. And then I thought, wait, maybe you're brewing it and that's what you use for the liquid.
Nope, the tea leaves. And I try to put the evening in Missoula in the food processor just a little bit by itself to chop up some of the longer pieces of chamomile.
Okay.
But yeah, it doesn't, it goes right through the cupcake. And because I added that, I had to add a little bit more milk than what the recipe called for just to keep the batter a consistent level. Mm-hmm. But I put my friend is a beekeeper in Seattle and makes this gorgeous honey. And so I made a shipwreck honey glaze. And all it is powdered sugar, a little bit of honey, and a little bit of milk or heavy cream, and you just mix it up. And the glaze, you just glaze over with a knife, and they make some beautiful cupcakes.
Oh, that sounds so decadent. And just, my mom, every year for her garden club, they have like a tea or something where everybody brings some kind of like herbed baked good, like, you know, lavender cookies or rosemary scones or something like that.
Yummy.
This would go lavender so perfect cookies. There.
Yeah. Lavender is such an underrated herb to use. I love using it in baking. I haven't experimented with it too much in cooking, but maybe I will do that. It's not only pretty, it's functional.
All right. Well, I'd like to hear some lavender baking recipes even sometime.
Yeah, I've put them on cupcakes that just crushed them up and done like a glaze, a lavender honey glaze before on the cupcakes. It's kind of like an Earl, you know, Earl Grey. I've had Earl Grey cupcakes and it's a great flavor, but you can overdo it really easily. So it always takes a little bit of experimenting.
Okay. My mom loves that tea.
Oh yeah. There's Earl Grey tea, tea cakes with like a honey glaze. Kind of like a London fog in a cupcake form. Delicious.
Okay.
Delicious. But yeah, there's that's
perfect.
That's about all I have today.
I think that's awesome. Well, thanks, Marissa. Have a great weekend and we'll chat with you next week.
Excellent. Sounds good, Jackie. I'll talk to you then.
All right. From the kitchen in Missoula, Marissa Franz signing off. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I would like to encourage you to visit our website at mikesgreengarden.wordpress.com/organicgardenerpodcast, where you can check out the links to everything we talked about today in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.